Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with Privacy Mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course. Present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is! Drawing Board or...
Miro! All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
Well, hello and welcome back to Lorehammer. My name is Eric.
Hey, Eric.
Hey, I'm Mark. Hey.
Yes, thank you, Mark, for joining us. And we actually have a very special guest today.
The way you're saying special implies like he's like, oh, he's cute, he's good, he's a spec. No, he's quotation mark special.
In every sense of the word.
Special guy.
However you define special, that is our guest today. And his name is the infamous, the sexy, the beautiful, the cute butt, Jordan.
Howdy.
Woo! It's
great to
be
back.
The people are wild.
Yeah.
Get the crew back together. Get the band back together.
The original. And they said we said we would never do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'd never do a reunion show. Yeah.
This is the reunion tour.
Yeah, Jordan, it's great to have you back. It's been a long time
since
you've been on.
Yeah, I don't even know the last time.
It's
been about a year,
yeah,
I would say.
Well, that's life.
A year?
You know, you blink and then all
of
a sudden...
Ever since all this COVID bullshit.
Yeah, life has taken a weird turn in the past year, but it's great to have you on the show. You're doing good, obviously.
Excellent, yeah.
Yeah, I can tell that your muscles are looking particularly nice today.
Really? I feel fat, but...
How much weight have you put on in COVID?
I've literally been the same weight.
Oh, my God.
Good
lucky
man.
Has it been up or down? It's just been...
I have put on a recognizable 15 to 20 pounds.
I think Mark just literally traded weight.
Yeah. Yeah. Every pound that he shed, I gained.
Because Mark is like probably one of the only people I've seen who's actually lost weight.
Yeah, you know, I'm thriving right now.
Lost,
flourishing.
Is that because of malnourishment or because you're being starved? Or...
He only gets fed once every 2 days.
There's a lot of factors involved. You know, laziness is, I'm not going to lie, a factor. You know, it's just all there.
Well, today with Jordan, we are going to do a really cool episode.
One of my favorites
style
of episodes. I love them.
Well, why don't you tell us what it is going to be?
Oh, okay.
Before we actually get into everything, what's the episode?
Oh, it's just a Bestiary and Herbarium episode, part three. You like animals? Yeah. You like plants? Yeah.
Next, we got to do a Pokemon crossover with Warhammer.
Got to catch all the...
I'll catch all the beasts.
All the Pokemon powers come from the warp, so instead of like Pikachu lightning bolting...
Yeah, yeah.
Warp.
They're psychers.
Yeah. That's a fun world. I like it all of a sudden.
I now want to get into Pokemon.
I feel like a fan film is coming on, funded by Lorehammer.
Just people in like onesies as like the Pokemon. Yeah. Like you just buy a Pikachu onesie... Now that's your Pikachu.
No, the Pokemon are like Warhammer animals.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
But you got to catch them with, you know, Pokeballs.
I see.
But before we get into that, we're going to just mention a couple things. So go check out Let's Talk Lorehammer. That's our
sister podcast.
That feels weird.
Our child podcast.
Yeah.
Our our stepchild podcast.
Yeah, there's enough distance for me. That feels appropriate. But yeah, we talk about, or they on that show, they talk about a community, what's going on, events. They have people from our Discord on the show to, you know, share what they're working on, all that kind of cool stuff. They play games. They do all types of madness.
It's a much more fun podcast than ours. Ours is very dry.
Yeah.
Compared to that.
Humorless, some would say.
Yeah. Lacking in anything good, others might say. But they're doing something special in one of their next episodes.
Yeah, so on
episodes.
This episode, they're talking what's beyond the galaxy. So they're just going to just... I don't even know. Like, I'm not on that episode.
They're going to extrapolate,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, is maybe Star Wars in 40K? What happened? I don't know. What's beyond the galaxy? Go check
Pokemon?
It out.
Pokemon?
Yeah. I don't know.
Hard to say.
And also, we have our Discord, so come check out our Discord. If you don't know what it is, you can just download, like, a quick app. It's a chat room type thing. It's really cool.
It is really cool. It's a really easy way to stay connected with us, too. I'm in it pretty frequently. Some would say too often.
Well,
because I lack anything else to do.
You're showering and that's all we can ask of you, you know?
Am I though? It's been a minute. Maybe this week I have. I can't remember.
Have you guys tried what's it called? Clubhouse?
No,
what is it?
That's like the rage. Apparently, I haven't tried it either, but a bunch of people are on it now.
It's like a community platform.
It's similar to Discord, but I think you can only do voice chat. You can't do. There's no text chat. Available. Yeah, but that's like intentional. So
sounds like a great platform for people to just yell at me.
Yeah.
I'm going to go on there.
I was just wondering, not for any particular reason. I was just wondering if you guys got in on that.
Well,
I'm not very hip and up to date with all the social media stuff. Yeah. I don't even have a Facebook still, so never did, never will.
That's not true. I think you have like 6 different profiles from the times you made it just once because you're like, I need to message one person time.
Yeah, damn it. I need a Facebook account so I can download this video game so I can get 50 extra credits. Fine. Yeah. Fine. You got me. Mobile game.
I'm actually on your Discord, Jordan.
Oh yeah,
your Star Wars.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on.
No, it's cool. I like every once in a while. It's nice to cleanse the palate of Warhammer and just hop over and see.
I'm gonna recycle all the memes Christian sends me onto there, and then I'm gonna look so funny.
You'll look so like current.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All this. Yeah.
Yeah.
That'll be good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Should we
go donate to our Patreon? Whatever.
Oh yeah, you can find us.
You can give us money
on lots of things.
Yeah, there's things out there. Okay, let's start the episode.
Let's do it. I'm excited.
I am too.
To
I
get
love
into
these.
This. So today's the Bestiary and Herbarium episodes, we pick specific books.
Yeah.
And we highlight or comb through and pick apart the cool plants and animals that are all throughout these things.
Yeah.
So with today's episode, they are coming from the White Dwarf issues 291, 292, and 313.
Yeah. And then there's also this cool website. It's called like 40K RPG Tools.
Mm-hmm.
And it has over 2,000 bestiary creatures on it. And there's one or two that I scammed from there as well because I found it. I'm like, that's cool. And I didn't want to lose it. I didn't want to forget about it. So I slammed it in there. So there you go.
You put it in. You put the circle shape in the triangle slot.
I made it work.
That's right.
You know, I have to say too, this will be a fun episode because whenever I'm playing like a video game, one of my favorite things is like the animal codexes or whatever.
Okay,
reading
like you kill an animal one time and then it has an entry.
Yeah,
and
you get like
a little fluff about it.
I feel like this is that.
It really is. And what's really nice about this one is you don't need to know about ultramarine history to do this.
Right.
You can just dive right into cool things.
Yeah.
So I really like these episodes, and obviously you guys do too.
Yeah. So here you go.
But also, sorry to interrupt. Also, it's like, I think one of the huge parts about like science fiction universe building is like the creatures that you create, right?
Yeah,
like the not the going away from like the humanoid creatures into like the actual
the
animals.
Crazy alien stuff you get, like really diverse like life forms and being like, hey, what if we have an entire planet where nobody has eyes nobody has a mouth, how do they still eat and stuff like that. So
what
I agree
were we watching the other day that had like A bunch of cool aliens.
Lilo and Stitch.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it has the Galactic Federation or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, a bunch of cool aliens.
It very much makes you think of the Star Wars Senate.
Sure.
In the Republic. Yeah, but it's just this... And they're very varied in that one, too. They're not all the same.
So. Yeah, you need creatures on a planet. You need good planets as well. There's some really cool planets on here. Also, even Luther McIntyre.
I was just going to say.
That pops up again.
Yeah, of course it does.
You need a couple things for.
So why don't you start it off, Mark?
Okay, so the first one we're talking about is a Necromunda Millisaur. And its threat level is low. Infesting the most disused areas of the Necromunda's underhive, millisaurs appear as gigantic centipedes, some growing as large as even 7 feet in length, with an armored, rock-like hide. They are ambush predators, preferring to lie in wait for their prey to come close. Once a potential target is within reach, the millisaur will then scuttle from its hiding place with remarkable speed, under its rows of razor-sharp teeth to bite the poor unfortunate victim and inject them with its potent venom. I don't like it. I don't like lots of legs.
It's 7 feet long.
Yeah.
It has an armored rock-like hide, and it's venomous?
Yeah, it's venomous.
And it can tunnel.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, does it tunnel? Oh, no. It just lies in wait. So it has a hiding place.
It likes to scuttle around, too.
Yeah,
it's not really like... a burrowing creature. It's more like a centipede.
Yeah, right? It just hides, like how a centipede hides under rocks and logs and stuff.
Yeah.
I love the artwork, how it has, like, the, like, just hard...
It looks like weird barnacle-type
Yeah,
things.
Barnacles, that's a good way. Yeah. It's just covered the back of it.
And then just a massive mouth full of teeth.
Yeah.
Are they good to eat?
I'm sure.
In Necromunda, everything. If you don't eat it, it eats you, so...
Well, let's learn more about the poison before we go and just start eating this thing. So this toxin will incapacitate virtually any creature the millisaur attacks, allowing it to drag them off into its lair, where it may then consume the victim at its leisure. That's nice.
It's nice to make sure that you can leisurely consume your food. Mm-hmm. And no one wants to rush.
Yeah.
You get the hiccups. You get some indigestion. It's not a great time.
What's crazy too, so some underhives, psykers have learned to use their abilities to control millisaurs and use them both as servants and living weapons. Ooh. While these beasts are no more domesticated, their mental bond with the psyker is strong, and they will do their master's bidding even if this means the death of the millisaur.
Beast masters.
Yeah. Yeah, so for some reason, this is another one of those kind of like psychic pets, like the Eldar Lee?
That little fox-like creature.
Yeah, what the fuck is that?
Well, that one...
Is this like the only creature these psykers can control? Or is it like specific to this millisaur?
Seems like these ones, they can do it easier. There's just some type of... Like maybe it just doesn't have any brain, so it's so easy to overpower it.
Right. Yeah. I don't think I've ever seen that there's like a list of animals that like are really well known to be psyker slaves or whatever. But this one, it just must be easier. Yeah.
There are some creatures though that are like warp sensitive, even if they're not like sensitive.
Of course, the crotalid. So, yeah, like there are creatures that live and like spend time in the warp or have their own connection to it. But I would assume that any creature that has like its own connection to the warp is probably going to be harder to manipulate through the warp than anyone that doesn't, because they might already have some kind of natural defense against it.
That's true. Sure.
Now maybe a listener would know this, but. This is like a millipede slash centipede type creature. However, it is carnivorous. Are there any millipedes in our universe on Terra that are carnivorous, or are they all?
Are you talking about in 40K or on Earth?
No, on Earth.
Like right now?
Yeah, right now.
Carnivorous millipedes.
I'm not much of a bug knowledge guy. I like playing with them, and that's... How we got?
Centipedes are carnivores.
Oh, are they?
And millipedes are primarily detritivores. So they feed primarily on decaying organic matter. Oh. And they may eat the roots and leaves of seeding plants.
Okay. Yeah. I thought more just they ate leaves, but there you go. You learn something new every day.
There you go.
And these ones are...
These things are real? Like, if there's a nuclear blast and one of these are there...
They
mutate into that.
Exactly. Yeah. A 7-foot-long, toxic rock centipede.
Yeah.
So that is threat level low.
Yeah.
That's low?
Apparently.
That makes it seem like I have a fighting chance. And I'm telling you, I do not have a fighting chance.
Maybe compared to like a space marine.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, who's fighting these things?
Yeah, exactly.
That isn't that big deal. Yeah. Yeah.
Literally curb stomps it. That was no contest. Okay, next one we have is the Glovian Stinger. And this is another threat level low. Akin to the small flying wasps or bees commonly seen on Terra, the Glovian Stinger is a monstrous specimen covered in a thick fur, weighing approximately 50 kilograms, and boasts an impressive 2-meter wingspan. The creatures reside in towering spires constructed of dried mud and debris. Often these spires dominate large areas of Glovia, which makes traveling through their wastelands a taxing endeavor. Some would say not worth it.
Yeah. It's a cool image, like just like the wasteland, and you see like these like mud stacks off in the distance, and you hear buzzing every now and again.
It reminds me of termite mounds.
Yeah,
grow up. But I don't know. There's the Silithids in World of Warcraft.
Okay, I have no idea.
They're a really, really old. They're from Classic. And they're just these massive bug creatures that put like growths and stuff everywhere.
Okay,
and it
kind of
reminds me.
Yeah.
They like transform entire landscapes into like their own stuff. And that kind of makes
me. That's the perfect kind of.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it makes me think of.
Yeah, just a mound and just buzzing. And like, keep in mind, this mound is like 100 feet tall.
Exactly. Yeah. It's huge.
Yeah, they're almost locust like.
Yeah.
Okay, I would like to I'd like to point something out, though. When agitated, these creatures will administer a potent, venomous sting to the hapless soul. Most do not survive. They're saying that, like, it's the venom that kills you.
Yeah.
But let's not forget the fact that the stinger on a 50-kilogram bee is literally just going to punch a hole into your chest.
Yeah, it's like a bolt.
Exactly, yeah. Now there's a 4-inch gaping wound in your body. No amount of venom matters at that point.
Fine. It's
a flesh wound.
As long as you don't take the stinger out, you'll be fine.
There's just this thing protruding from your chest as you're walking through the wasteland. These creatures... So the Glovian Stinger hardly ever strays from the hive alone, and they usually hunt. Oh, so they hunt. In groups of 5 or more.
Yeah, they're not pollinators. They're not that kind of bee.
Although naturally non-aggressive, the stingers will become hostile towards anything they feel is a danger to the spire.
Cool.
It's cool, like, to think of, like, there's a queen, and she has all her workers. I'm pretty much... picture it exactly like how
you ever
like,
see bees?
Yeah, exactly. Like
the movie. That's how I picture it.
So they fall in love with humans?
Yes.
Or Beedrill the Pokemon.
Kakuna, you
what? Are you playing Pokemon recently or
no, I just remember that from my childhood. That was
it's fine, you can tell us if you
are. Yeah, Jordan, I like Pokemon.
I got a rare Pokemon I'm looking to trade on the download.
You got any shinies, bro? So, yeah, these are just big bugs.
Big flying wasp-like meat eaters, I guess.
Yeah,
they're nice. Up next
is the Magmakin. Threat level, moderate.
Oh, yeah. So we've seen 2 lows now, and we're on our first moderate.
Yeah, okay. Now we're turning up the heat.
Ooh, I like what you did.
Literally and metaphorically. Pun intended. Okay. The resilient Magmakin make their homes in extremely hot and hostile climates, often seen in the proximity of gas vents or active volcanoes. Magmakin thrive by absorbing heat and carbon from lava flows and adding it to their own bulk. So I guess they eat lava.
That's so cool.
I kind of wonder if they make me think of like hippos, but for lava. Like, do they just live in rivers of lava? Yeah, like, they just wander out of it when they need to?
Well, no. They're like the Minecraft little lava creatures.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I don't know those.
I got you.
Now I'm sad.
They make nice noises.
Yeah. It is interesting. Like, I don't, is it like their veins are molten or something? Is that the depiction they're going for?
Yeah.
Oh, there's the Striders. Oh, in the other world, whatever it's called.
Yeah.
What's that?
Nether.
Yeah, the Nether.
Nether.
Yeah. The Nether.
Yeah, like it.
There are these quadrupedal beasts, and it looks like they have molten skin with rocks covering them, but I doubt it's actually molten skin. Like, I think it's just...
Or maybe, like, their blood is just, like, so hot, it's depicted that way, but it's not actually. It's just very hot, warm-blooded creatures.
Very warm-blooded.
I mean, yeah, because they obviously consume lava.
Yeah. Man, you got to have a real hard stomach.
The iron stomach.
Yeah. Their epidermal layer is composed of dried lava that is as hard as rock and as resilient as carapace armor.
So you got to think that someone actually fought them and was like, damn, that's as hard as carapace armor.
Yeah. Also, another creature that has like a rock-like... Mm-hmm. Outer layer of skin.
Yeah. But at least this one, I like, at least they have an explanation for why this one is rocks. Like, it consumes rocks and then it has all that crap in its body and it sweats it out. Yeah, exactly. It
sweats lava almost.
It's like it's building salt crystals or something in rock formation or something. But that Milosaurus, it just has rocks on it.
Yeah, it's... interesting how creatures in 40K adapt with rock epidermis. They're highly territorial. These fiery creatures will protect their domain and their young fiercely against intruders and often charge headlong into the enemy with reckless abandon. So.
They definitely look like they are the creature that throws their weight around. Ever see like stegosauruses, how in Land Before Time?
Yeah, tell me more.
Isn't that a great...
Take me on this journey.
Yeah, they...
That's like nostalgic.
Yeah, they make them look like they just throw their weight around and they like put their back to their young and then charge at whatever enemy is. That's what these guys make me think of. I can just see them tucking their head down, like right between their arms, and just smashing into whatever is in front of them with their massive rocks on their back.
Yeah, I mean, I guess like kind of like a bull or a rhinoceros.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't look like that, but that's how they would charge at something.
They have these like really, really massive front legs, really thick.
Yeah.
And then their back
legs. They look like lava gorilla frogs. So gorilla body made of lava with a frog head.
That's right, yeah. I see it.
And like stegosaurus fins, dorsal fins.
Don't forget those, yeah.
People are just, they just have a bunch of animal characteristics and they're just throwing darts on the wall and see.
Just like
what
a
they
mix
hit.
Mix and match of.
Yeah.
All right. Up next, we got the Calyrax theme.
Calyrax.
Okay.
That's just like old days. Hey, Jordan.
Threat level high, you guys. Your threat level is high right now to me. I don't like it. So these monstrous insectoids are truly a terror to behold. They make their homes beneath the jungle floor and use their powerful claws to burrow deep into the earth in order to initiate a surprise attack on the prey. The Calyrax fiend is known to grow to the size of a truck and is basically composed of five segments. The head is covered in a thick chitin with three protruding eyes and a massive claw arms, like coming out of the side of the head. Then the next couple body segments each have like just like a little circle and then huge talon legs coming off of them, which are all capable of piercing tanks. It's quite a weird shape.
Yeah, it's almost like the body is a cylinder, but it's made of segments. Yeah. But it's a very tiny, tiny cylinder, especially compared to the ratio of leg to body.
It also has a final segment that ends in a barbed tail that it used for bashing anything that like gets close. It has a bunch of spikes on the end of it and, you know, all types of deadly shit.
Those claws are huge.
Yeah. Those claws are old One Eyes claws, if you're looking at this conversion. So that gives you like a scale of how big that model actually is on tabletop.
Yeah. Those are three big eyes, too.
Yeah.
It's a very alien-looking creature.
Yeah. Look, this one even has more rock-like growths on it. What the heck is going on?
Yeah, those are like barnacles.
There's a theme.
I mean, it does look armored as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it has the chitin, right?
Yeah. So Is that how you say it? I say it. I always said a chitin.
Yeah. Civilized people say chitin. Everyone else, like, you know, contrarians? That's what you call people who just have to be difficult? And say,
is that
chitin?
What it is?
I think so, yeah.
No, you're definitely wrong. That's not what they're called.
Well, I think like chitin or chitin, whatever it is, I've only read it in video games.
Oh, and it has
I
don't CH. Think I've,
yeah. I don't think I've ever heard.
I have done that all the time. Words I definitely pronounced wrong. Chaos.
Really?
No.
Yeah.
You never heard anyone say that like before you read it?
No. I mean, I read it probably pretty early on. But yeah, I definitely read it as chaos.
Chaos is strong.
I'm pretty sure island I messed up all the time. Mm. And Wednesday. That made no sense to me. Mm. How does Wednesday turn to Wednesday?
Arkansas or Kansas, you know, right. It's all just fucking shenanigans out there when it comes to English.
Fair enough, yeah.
So this creature is notoriously resilient. Those who have been fortunate enough to survive an encounter with one often tell tales of wounds inflicted on the Calithrax fiend, closing up before their very eyes. So it has, like, regenerative abilities.
I mean, first of all, how do you even get through the chitin?
Yeah, it's huge.
Like, it looks so thick.
Yeah.
And so they burrow
underneath
a jungle,
and
then they just surprise, attack.
Yeah, it's like a giant crab, basically. It's tank-sized crab.
Yeah, the size of a truck.
Like, it looks like it has wings, too, but I don't know what you would call those.
Protrudals.
Weird. Maybe they're like sensory things, you know? They like quiver in the air or something and they're like trying to sense air movements. That's a real thing, I swear.
Yeah. Like snakes use their tongue.
Yeah. And bugs. They just have these antennae and they just quiver. And
the world's full of neat and interesting creatures.
Like, cat's whiskers, aren't they similar?
Mm. Like, even our hairs.
Yeah.
They function kind of like that.
I don't believe you. That's where I draw the line.
That's where you draw the line. Here's the line, Eric. You fucking crossed it.
All right. Up next, we got another crazy... wow. What is this one even called?
I said Pentarant.
Okay.
But you could do Pentarant, 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 Pentar... you know... there's only so many, I guess.
Yeah. Threat level moderate.
Is this mine?
Done. Yeah.
Okay. The Pentarant is a highly evolved arachnid creature. Apart from superficial similarities to a conventional spider, the physical morphology of a Pentarant is drastically different from those species commonly seen on Terra. Rather than having a spider's eight legs, the Pentarant, if you could guess from its name, makes its way through life perched on only...
I could not have, to be honest.
Five limbs.
Holy shit. Nice.
In addition, there are five separate eyes, each with its own field of vision, evenly placed around the Pentarant's circular body. It makes me think that it has no, like, forward. You know how we have, like, a...
Yeah. This is your face, this is your front.
There's like a word for it, like that we have like different vectors or whatever.
Sure.
But it sounds like that thing, it's just broken up into five equal portions, and whatever way it wants is forward.
Yeah.
That'd be a weird perspective on the world. To not really have like a forward.
And like you see 360.
Yeah. And it gets even crazier. An even more unique feature is the Pentarant's five separate cognitive centers. Each controls one eye and one of the creature's limbs. So it has like five brains.
Yeah. Huh.
Is this like an intelligent being? Or?
I mean, it is just a creature. I have no idea how intelligent it really is. But you got to think, like, how does it communicate all five brains together at the same time to walk?
Like, there's probably still like nerve bundles connecting them, like sending communication signals, you know?
Yes.
You'd have to think so, yeah.
There'd have to be. And then it's not a big deal. Like, each one's, like, making decisions by itself, and then it goes to, like, a center brain, maybe.
I don't know. It doesn't say center brain.
But, is it a hive mind, or is it is it just one creature? I don't know.
I think that the five brains are constantly fighting with each other.
Oh, and it just...
And one wants to go this way, and the other one says, no, screw you, Greg. I'm going that way.
Oh, I just picture the appearance, like, stumbling, like, gangly and weird.
Until it finds prey.
Oh.
Because they all want food.
Oh, yeah. And then it
just,
they cooperate.
Yeah, exactly. And then it
that is kind of
a
unique idea for a creature.
That's cool.
It's a mess until like one of its instincts kicks in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. I have a new respect for that. Cool.
Threat level moderate.
Yeah.
So more dangerous than the Milosaurus with the venom. That's good to know.
Are we doing the next one now?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to say Chiaro Ashcroaker. Threat level high. Spelt with a CH, by the way. The Ashcroaker is just one of many denizens, albeit a more determined and deadly one than most, found on the ash wastes of Chiaro 27.
Are there 26 other Chiaros before Chiaro 27?
That must be like a really big solar system.
Yeah, it's huge. And here's our solar system with 70 planets.
Too inhabitable.
Easily the size and girth of a full-grown man, Ashcroakers are essentially unleashed ball of teeth, claws, and aggression set atop of a set of legs.
They look almost like an emu or an ostrich, but instead of the neck coming up,
how do they maintain their balance? That looks like a...
Yeah, they don't even got little T-Rex arms to give them any stabilization. That's just unfortunate.
Yeah. Well, anyways.
Okay, when I was reading this description, the unleashed ball of teeth, claws, and aggression on the top of legs, I swear there's a Muppet that it's pretty much just like a head on top of two legs and it's covered in fur. Am I crazy?
Yeah, he's orange.
Yeah.
Yeah,
okay, that was what I was picturing when I was reading this Ashcroaker. Obviously not true, but...
While tracking prey, they emit dreadful croaking noises back and forth between themselves, which earned them the moniker, quote, Croaker. Their vocal cords distort the sound so that a strange sort of ventriloquism takes place. Consequently, the prey is never able to pinpoint just where the noise is coming from until it's too late.
That's cool.
That's so kind of interesting.
This is found in the ash wastes. Yeah. Now, I like to think that there's volcanoes constantly just spewing ash on this planet, and so it's just like snow, but it's ash just drifting down, and all you hear, because it maybe is low visibility in one day, and all you hear is just rah, rah, rah,
and you're like, swear.
Yeah, it's coming from that direction, but it's not.
And yeah.
Yeah. It really mess you up.
Yeah. I like them. They're pretty cool.
I guess that's why it's threat level high.
Yeah, because it combined with its environment, I guess.
Yeah, how are you supposed to protect yourself against this? You have no idea where it is.
And if you, a planet that's going through major volcanic activity is in the midst of, if it has life on it, it'll be in the midst of an extinction event. So in order for, you have to be a very, very resilient animal in order to survive an extinction event like that. So yeah, I would imagine it would be very,
you have to be
dangerous.
A perfect hunter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you guys think they hunt in packs or alone, these things?
I wouldn't be surprised if they lived solitary. I kind of picture
because I guess with the ventriloquism you wouldn't need to.
Exactly. But I wouldn't be surprised when food comes a bunch descend on it.
I don't know. I think they might have some kind of social, this would be my only hypothesis, is because they are such a sort of vocal creature, they would have some kind of social herd or something like that, kind of social aspect.
There are a lot of creatures out there that are very vocal, but they also could be in their own community or not. You hear toads and frogs all the time, but they don't necessarily live in communities. Or even cicadas or grasshoppers or stuff like that. You still hear them, but
It's very bird-like, this thing. Birds
I get the bird, too, for sure. It looks like a naked ostrich.
Yeah.
That's been stripped of
its... A flightless bird.
Yeah. But no wings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just legs.
These massive, powerful legs and a big flesh head.
Yeah. Cool. So, up next, we got the Scuttle Hag. These loathsome little creatures often make their home near bogs or marshes. They're naturally adept. Whoa.
Mark Googled scuttle hag, and it's showing scuttle bug, which is apparently a little children's tyke.
Look, man, don't go look into the history of this thing and the children toys.
Yeah, that's
that
it.
One.
Yeah.
I might not even be able to find an image. But anyways, so these loathsome little creatures often make their homes near bogs or marshes. They're naturally adept at swimming and have navigating through the murky waters that dominate such regions. Scuttle hags are crafty predators who use their... Wow, sorry, I can't talk today. Okay, let's take a sip.
Yeah, good call.
You got to do a rebreather? Okay, mm-hmm. Perfect. Scuttle hags are crafty predators who use their chameleon skin to hide in the undergrowth while they manipulate a prehensile tail to lure their prey closer, like into striking distance.
So they look like these like flesh sacks.
Yeah.
Like it, obviously there's a shape and it looks like there is a skeleton, but yeah. It also looks like it's really mushy and goopy.
Yeah.
Right? Like you could pick one up and it maybe is drooping or something. Yeah.
Like
I don't know.
It looks like flubber.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I see flubber.
But like flubber that you've dropped on the ground one too many times and now it's like getting dirty. You know? It's like...
Yeah. So it's now kind of like a little harder than normal. Yeah,
brownish.
That's it has a weird with. Tail on it for some reason. We don't know where that came from. Weird stick.
So they have that little tail and they shake it and lure it up enemy or prey closer.
Mm-hmm.
Those who are lured in are then quickly pounced upon. The scuttle hag's mouth open large enough to fit most small animals inside, quickly devouring the rows or being devoured by rows of teeth.
Yeah. I think they're just like a couple appendages, a tail, and a mouth, really.
Yeah. The other weird thing about them is their tail, apparently they can shake it and vibrate it, and it creates a resonant melodic tone that inexplicably lures their quarry closer.
So, me too, though, like, honestly. Yeah. I would get sucked in by that, for sure.
The little wiggly tail.
Oh, what's that sound over there? Let's just go walk into this marsh. See what's happening. Okay.
Yeah, those are cool. I like those little slime bugs, actually. They're kind of just weird slime creatures.
Yeah, I feel like you'd maybe have one of them, no problem.
Sure.
But if there's a bunch around you all trying to get their flesh sack body onto you so they can eat you.
I feel like if they don't get you the first time, you can kind of just like walk away from them. Like,
They're kind of like mini demonic Jabba the Hutts.
Yes.
Kind of disgusting, really.
Yeah, it's the Hutt baby.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay, so the next we're going to do the spined Rhodox or Rhodox. Which is threat level moderate.
Cool.
While not as prevalent as its closest relative, the Grox, the spined Rhodox is still common in many systems throughout the galaxy, most notably those unfortunate worlds with a dense green skin population.
Cool.
Spined Rhodoxes are lumbering beasts covered in thick fur. There are many spines that protrude from the Rhodox, which it will use for attacking anything that aggravates it. It makes me think that it... Again, just throws its body at things.
Yeah.
It's very dinosaur-like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Except for the fur.
Yeah, the fur is a little weird.
The fur is odd, but the spines and the shape of it definitely is dinosaur.
Well, you know, a lot of, what do you call them, paleontologists are starting to hypothesize that a lot of dinosaurs actually had fur on them.
I thought it was feathers.
That's what I thought, too.
No, they're like... this is like more new that I've read about
I haven't learned much about dinosaurs since like kindergarten.
It's been a minute.
The thing about theories about dinosaurs and what they look like, they change like every 10 years. Like the Stegosaurus has been like hotly debated whether it even existed, right? Like and every 10 years
you can't tell me it's not real.
Every 10 years like the consensus changes on whether or not it was like a real.
It's just that's what happens when you try and dig through the past.
Yeah.
It's impossible to know what it was.
Yeah, a lot of it is kind of guesswork. Mm-hmm. Right?
Well, I guess then, Jordan, that this fits in. Your fur-covered dinosaurs.
Saying, I'm just saying it may not be so far away.
Although the Rhodox is not readily domesticated by the foul greenskins, an interesting relationship has formed between the creature and the orc clans. It would seem that certain tribes of orcs have adopted the hunting of this creature as a form of initiation for potential clan leaders. Those orcs who survive such a dangerous encounter and return with a set of Rodok's horns as a trophy are highly revered in orc society and are often rewarded with the elite position of Nob within the ranks of the clan. This is, I think, the first time I've ever heard of, like, a trial for orcs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Anytime I ever talk about their hierarchy, it's all just, like, bigger means better.
Yeah, yeah. You beat up this guy.
Exactly, yeah, but sure. I like the idea that, like, some orcs do it by tests.
Sure.
If you beat this test, then you gain this rank. Yeah.
Well, I think there's some, too, that do, like, venom tests and, like...
Snake bites, yeah. Yeah. They definitely do.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I really like this one. I like the physical test of having to destroy a... And, you know, you probably have to do it with your bare hands.
Sure, of course.
Not allowed to bring any, you know, choppas or stabbas or whatever.
You're allowed one grot to do with whatever you want.
That's right.
Whether it's food...
It's a snack, yeah.
Whether it's a distract... It's your grot. Do with it as you will.
You can't bring Bombot?
No, you can't bring... No, this is an Imperium.
That's right. Shoot. This is orange. No, what's the squig that is a grenade?
Oh, like a bomb squig?
Yeah, a bomb squig. You can't just bring a...
You can, you know.
Dynamite to throw at it. Yeah. These are pretty cool, though.
Yeah.
It doesn't, oddly enough, talk about whether they are good to eat. Because Grox is a pretty big food source in the Imperium.
Oh, these ones. There's just so much hair you have to get past.
And dangerous. They're dangerous.
There, yeah.
Grox are dangerous enough, I guess. Yeah. So.
I would imagine.
And these aren't domesticated. And
Good call.
I'm sure they're fine to eat. I don't know. Who knows? You know,
are Grox like more like cattle or something?
They are, but they also kill people all the time.
This is a Grox and also the Imperium's
Looks pretty fucking dangerous.
Yeah.
It's domesticated.
They can survive on rocks. Which is what makes them very nice, because you don't have to have massive pastures. You just, here's some rocks for you, you stupid animal.
Yeah, you could, like, go to a dead planet, basically.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
All right, should we do the next one here?
Yeah.
Arcanodonts, threat level medium.
Mm-hmm.
The infamous Arcanodonts are a type of carnosaur and are the top of the evolutionary ladder in the honeycombed mining world of Mordant. These giant reptiles vaguely resemble dinosaurs on ancient Terra.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess they're sort of T-Rex body-like.
Yeah, they have that softer underbelly and like that really long, elongated body with that tail that goes out straight almost.
Yeah, really long neck too.
Yeah, exactly.
Not super long.
Yeah, kind of reptilian.
Long enough.
They are often sold as vicious pets and status symbols at the great cost of both life and raw meat. Interesting.
If you're rich enough, hey.
Nothing but the best if you're rich enough.
Yeah, it's like a rich people hobby.
Exactly, yeah.
Some Astartes chapters, including trials that pit the recruit against these lethal predators, but by slaying one... they will have proven themselves worthy of the transition.
Oh, so they do it for, like, initiates?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. So you're putting an 8-year-old against this?
Yeah,
a 7-year-old? And being
with
like, all right.
With a stone spear, bud.
Go fight it.
Yeah, dude. Even rarer, though, are those Astartes that are able to capture, break and train, eventually riding on the back of the great beasts into battle.
Yeah. We need more Astartes riding on beasts into battle.
It's
giant
sweet.
Lizards, wolves, dare I say.
Birds.
Bears.
Battlestar Galactica. Yeah. That's so cool. We need more Astartes and like... animals with like harnesses on them that are obviously like Imperium and Mechanicus made, you know, not just like slapping an Astartes on a T-Rex toy. That would be stupid. You gotta model it. Oh,
There's another regiment, a guard regiment that we're talking about. Mm-hmm. You're gonna like them too.
Oh, I know.
Oh, you know.
I spent a lot of time reading that one because I read it and I was like, wait a minute. I had to go redo the whole thing.
Yeah, there's got to be, they should do more mounts.
Yeah,
100%.
In 40K. That'd be pretty sweet.
It just makes sense. Like, I think.
Does it make sense?
Well, okay, think of this. Okay. The Mandalorian. Remember, when he goes to that one planet to go find Baby Yoda.
Yeah.
And he meets that one guy who says,
This is the way or something?
No, he says, I have spoken.
Oh, yeah.
I can't remember his name for the life of me now.
I can't remember.
But he helps him capture these indigenous beasts,
yeah, yeah,
and then trains him how to ride on one. What better way would there be to traverse a planet you don't know,
yeah, exactly,
than something that's native to the planet itself? It makes so much sense to me.
Just as long as they're not horses, eh? That's the line. Or do you like horses?
Well, horses are stupid, first of all. We were discussing in the Discord today how terribly fragile horses are. Oh, and don't cough on it because it'll die.
Yeah, you break its leg and you got yourself a nice meal now.
I feel like you want a mount that doubles as a weapon, you know? Yeah.
Especially in 40K.
Yeah.
And in 40K, how hard would it be to find one of those?
Yeah.
Just like imagine the Space Marine. He's an armored tank already himself, so he's not going to get shot off there.
Yeah. But yeah, I like the idea of using the planet that is using animals that are indigenous to the planet that you're on. I think that's very cool.
Let me recommend a episode of Lorehammer for you.
I swear to God, Mark, if you don't put me to some Space Wolf bullshit.
No, I would never. I'm just pulling it up. Well, basically, Eric, you've heard of Exodites before?
Oh, dinosaurs?
Yeah, you're gonna love them.
Okay, it's bullshit unless the dinosaurs are native to the planet, in which case I'm totally for it.
Okay, episode 82. That was a good episode.
That's very recent.
Yeah. Okay.
Did we have anything else about the Arcanodonts?
No.
Which are different from the Arcanodoos?
Yes. No. We don't.
So up next, we got hunting beasts, and threat level vary. So there are many different types of hunting beasts used in the galaxy. Different races prefer or have access to different species. This creature feature gives you a stats characteristic. So I never talked about this. So in the White Dwarf, it's very cool. They used to have what was called creature features, and that's where we're getting all these things. And they had like a way to make up like your own creatures, including stat lines and special rules and point values and all this really cool stuff.
And this is for 40K, right?
Yeah.
Because it was very different back then. The environment was kind of another thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah, like this was 2004, so this is, I think, third edition of this one.
That's crazy.
Yeah, for it to have like these kind of things, but yeah. So it's really cool. Like, yeah, you make your own stuff and it has like a bunch of different stuff. But anyway, so on this,
it gives you a lot of freedom to really make it however you want it. And here's a small little template for you. So,
yeah. On this creature feature, they named a couple of like hunting beasts, but they never described anything about them. Mm-hmm. They just gave us some cool names. So the Mordant Pit Rat, the Glade Hounds of Kenak, the Ice Backs of Cathella, and the Bloodstalkers of Flotus 3. But yeah, cool names. Don't know anything about them.
Yeah, but it's totally awesome because you can just make up whatever you want using like these little tidbits that they give you.
Yeah. So that's hunting beasts that they covered in here.
Yeah, that's very similar. We've seen that in our other Bestiary and Herbarium episodes too, where they talk about like flying creatures or like dinosaurs. You know, it's kind of just like a catch-all for anything. So
yeah, exactly.
Okay, moving on to the greater and lesser Cetacean Barking Toad. Threat level extremely fucking high.
Yeah.
So the Cetacean Barking Toads,
yeah, I'll change that in the notes,
called
extremely
Catachanus Buffo Moribundus of the Death World of Catachan are considered the most devastatingly poisonous creature in the entire galaxy.
Yeah.
Fortunately, it is also extremely rare, unless you're on Catachan.
And then it's native there.
Yeah, so don't go there. The Barking Toads have one distinguishing feature that separates it from other toads in appearance. Two large flesh sacs containing poison around its neck. Now, personally, for how dangerous this creature is, I don't think that's enough warning. I would also like a massive flagpole that sticks up 300 feet in the air that says, "Don't come near me. I'm a barking toad."
Not going to happen.
Yeah. They can be very unpredictable in movement. One moment hopping around, the next hiding underneath dark rocks. They do, however, tend to live in or near shady, dank, dark places, and extremely don't appreciate being disturbed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're found in like the deepest, darkest jungle of Catechat.
Ah, that's where I found Mark. The deep dank. He's, don't disturb me, Eric.
He's licking toads. In the caves of Catechat.
I just want my eyes to, like, the whole, like,
yeah, yeah, they like have that like shimmer on them. So this reclusive amphibian has a unique self-defense mechanism. It's weird to me to call it self-defense.
Yeah.
But we'll let you judge that. when threatened, it emits a cloud of toxins that kills all life within a kilometer in every direction.
At least they wasn't a mile. At least they used that measurement on Catechat.
It was 0.6 of a mile.
No, son of a bitch, no, all the life, gone. It reduces every biological organism, including itself, to a slimy, formless mass, and no vegetation will ever grow there again.
Yeah, it's extreme.
Yes, very extreme. The poison is so virulent that it can penetrate even power armor, and no other known form of armor can hold it at bay.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with privacy mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course. Present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again. Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is. Drawing board or...
Miro. All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
Yeah. So, I don't get this. Power armor is, like, sealed.
Yeah.
But this thing says it attacks biological life.
Yeah.
So if you're in a sealed container and like the out, what's exposed is metal and rubber and whatever, does it eat through those things too?
I would imagine it eats through like the rubber parts, like the seal between the joints. That would be my guess.
So if you were in like a welded shut box, you should be okay.
Yeah. Yeah, like how do they research these things?
Yeah. they get cameras. Yeah. They get cameras and then they send in people in different levels of armor and they're like, let's see what works. Spoiler alert. They all die.
Could you make like a warp field around you or something?
Yeah. Probably. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
That'd be a good way to do it too. That's a little better than my welded shut box.
Look. We're the Imperium. We don't care how many bodies we have to kill to get the research we need.
It's true. Cannon fodder.
It's fine.
The lesser Cetacean barking toad is the smaller cousin to the great barking toad and is far less destructive, killing anything only within the immediate area. Mm-hmm. yeah, that kilometer.
Yeah.
Like, you might not even be the one disturbing this thing, and boom, you're dead.
Yeah, like, Catechan just has, like, a couple of these, like, barren spots where no life will ever grow again.
Yeah,
is it like they only release the poison when they're feeling threatened, or is it just wherever they go?
It's when they feel threatened, they explode.
They explode into this poison because it kills them too to release it.
Yeah. Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's just these like kilometer wide spots where nothing is.
Yeah. Like I would imagine these have to be so fucking rare, man. They have to be.
Hello, welcome back. We just had a small hiccup, but we just were talking about the Cetacean barking toad. Frog. Barking toad.
Incredibly rare. Has to be rare.
Exactly. Yes, that's where we were. And I agree. Yes.
Now I forget if we talked about what happens to them. Did we talk about everything? What did we leave off? I'm honestly confused. Sorry.
Yeah, no, we're done. We're done. We're done with the barking toad.
Okay, well then, Hunting Lizard of Cashan is up next.
Who did the toad?
You did, I think.
I did. The Moribundus, that's right.
Yeah, these things are fucking sweet.
Hunting Lizard of Cashan. Threat level medium.
Ooh.
Cashan is a young world, mountainous and volcanic, with thick, fast-growing jungles and oceans of primordial swamp. The perfect environment for the two-legged, upright-walking dinosaur, hunting lizard of Kashan.
Yeah, it's sweet.
Yeah, it is pretty cool.
It really just looks like a T-Rex. Yeah. It even has the small arms.
Yeah, I love the stub face.
Yeah, though. The snout is a little different for sure.
Yeah. The hunting lizards were one of the most successful local predators functioning in packs. They posed a very real threat to the early human colonists. That is until they were successfully domesticated and bred in captivity. Over time, the guard regiment on the planet learned to ride the hunting lizards into war. Their thick scales protected the hunting lizard, while a short but powerful jaw lined with teeth to crush anything that gets too close.
Yeah, it's cool. The guys on the back, they have these like huge lances too. I can only imagine they're explosive.
Blasting lances. Yeah. That seems to be a classic for any of like the mounted cavalry. Yeah. Let's put an explosive charge on this long stick.
Yeah, more mounts. Come on, we gotta get some mounted units.
Yeah.
Quote. Now, I'm not saying that horses are without their uses. They can get a move on. If worse comes to worse, one can feed a platoon for a week. Thing is, though, once the slugs and lass start flashing about, being on a horse ain't much use. On Kashan, though, we have hunting lizards. They have a hide thick as a flak vest and a bite that'll take your arm off. Now you tell me, if you were going to ride into battle, what would you rather be on? End quote. By Troop Sergeant Urien's Quist of the 3rd Kashan Xeno Riders.
I'm not gonna lie, a whole sort of
battalion of riders, I guess.
Yeah, like whole regiments of them. Yeah.
I would rather be on a hunting lizard.
Yeah.
It also looks very natural. Like, especially, of course, it's artwork.
Oh, like, but it sits naturally.
Yeah. Some things it just looks weird when you try and mount them. I've been told I need to just stop trying to mount things.
Yeah.
Because I'm being a weirdo. But this
looks natural.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's made to be mounted.
That's right.
The regiment would rename themselves the Kashan Xeno Riders and would prove many times over their speed and deadliness on the battlefield. And there's also a notable battle, the Battle of Talavar.
Ooh, tell me all about it, Jordan.
During the Imperial Crusade to cleanse the Fascine system from the Hrud in 592 to 602 M41, an entire regiment of Kashan Xeno Riders served with the Imperial Guard 60th Army. Fascine had three worlds in its biosphere, each of which was urbanized but in a state of ruin and decay. One of these worlds, Talavar, was home to an enslaved human population and was the first targeted. Attempts to clear the ruins with infantry were wholly unsuccessful. The Hrud, emerging from their warrens, conducted highly effective hit-and-run attacks focused on destroying ammunition and fuel stockpiles. The preternatural speed of the Hrud defeated all attempts at pursuits until the Kashan were deployed. Using feral hunting techniques, the bulk of the regiment closely pursued the Hrud, while detached squadrons raced forward on the flanks to herd them together and finally encircle them. The raids were swiftly contained, allowing the 60th Army's infantry to concentrate on launching set-piece assaults on the Hrud warrens themselves.
That's cool.
Yeah, especially because dealing with Hruds is a pretty big deal.
Yeah. Like, the infantry, they couldn't get close. They would literally just, like, age out, essentially.
Yeah. But being able to, like, herd and position them how you want it just makes striking so much more effective.
Yeah. Yeah, they're cool.
I really like them, honestly.
It's tough not to do a miniature of them.
Even of the all the different like reptiles and stuff, dinosaur stuff we've seen, I just love how we just use this in our regiment, obviously, because it's good. So
wouldn't you want a T-Rex?
Yeah. Ooh, give me a little Terran horse? No. Give me a hunting lizard.
Yeah, they're sweet. All right. Up next we have the Slasher Fiend or Slasher Beasts.
Let's adding 40k really changes what you Google.
Yeah. Man, this thing is weird. It might not even be around. But
Slasher beasts are deadly creatures mostly confined to the death worlds of Luther McIntyre.
Luther McIntyre! Yeah,
so you know they're fucking crazy.
Yeah.
But they can also be found on Kalanan 7 due to the disastrous attempt by the Adeptus Mechanicus to reseed the world with life. They stand twice the height of a man on two hooved feet. Its torso is covered in a thick chitin and has four tentacle-like arms ending in talons. Its head is scaled and lizard-like.
Okay, I'm trying to piece together what this looks like, and I'm getting such a weird image. So it's 12 feet tall.
Yep.
It has two hooves, which I'm only assuming it's like the I have no better example, but you know, like the Draenei legs. How they have that, like, that weird back bend because they are goats.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or whatever. So it's got those legs.
Yeah.
It's torso.
Armor-like skin.
Again. Yeah. But maybe specifically on its torso, too, right? Like, maybe it doesn't have this chitin on its legs or anything.
I gotta find this.
And then four tentacle-like arms ending in talons.
Yeah, like arms with no elbows.
Yeah, exactly. They're just, like, flapping around on this 12-foot-tall creature.
Yeah! I gotta find the picture.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine what that actually looks like.
Yeah,
they're trying to go for.
I'll keep reading, Mark, if you want to find it. Yeah. Rogue traders acting under license from a genitor biologist captured a number of the beasts to act as top predators in Kalana 7's new ecology. Unfortunately, you find the picture?
Yeah, I did.
Okay. Unfortunately, the adepts found that away from the deserts of their homeworld, the creatures bred rapidly and slaughtered every life form they came into contact with.
That's nice. And you want to see what did the slaughtering?
I do. Oh my god, what is that? Okay. Let me shove that at the camera.
That's kind of cartoonish.
What? Yeah, it looks weird. Big game hunters and even some Astartes chapters began coming to Kalana 7 to hunt and kill the beasts. I like this. It becomes like a trial.
Yeah.
But despite many bloody calls, the Adeptus Mechanicus were forced to abandon their project. Because of the deadly and invasive slasher fiend, Kalana 7 is now classified as a death world, only visited by those who wish to hunt the monster. So... the entire planet now is like, well, shit, I guess this is a death world because now
these things.
It just takes over. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah. It's the weirdest model.
So they claim that once they removed them from the desert, they bred rapidly.
Yeah.
So I definitely think that their environment must be really harsh, right? Because...
Well, like on Luther Mac, I think it's the other way. On Luther McIntyre, their environment was really harsh.
That's so what I'm saying.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. On this Kalana 7, the environment was so much easier.
Yeah,
they were just like, oh, we don't have to worry about all these problems that we did on Luther, so we can just multiply and multiply.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Crazy.
And that just took over a planet, this weird thing. Go, if you can somehow, go, you know, donate to our Patreon. You can see the video of the picture of this thing, because it's truly weird.
Yeah.
Or look up White Dwarf number 313, February 2006.
Yeah, you'll find a weird... It honestly...
Yeah.
It doesn't look like a professional modeler put that together.
No, it doesn't.
I don't know how it got into these White Dwarfs.
You know what?
Yeah, it kind of looks like a kid just slapped it together.
Yeah, they just like picked parts.
Graham McNeil made that, you sons of bitches.
How could they do that to my boy? My beautiful boy.
I'm not actually sure if it's Graham McNeil, but it is Graham, so it might very well be.
Well, yeah. Do you know any other Grahams
that work at GW?
It's like disconcerting to see like a dinosaur reptile with tentacles.
Yeah. My brain just
like penis thing.
My brain just can't do it.
And like, that's not a gun. Like, it doesn't have a range profile. It's a
big wanker.
It just has a big fuck off dick on it. Like,
so weird.
I'll have to post a picture of it in the Discord because it's fucking nuts.
I'm gonna read the parts that he used to put this model together. The plastic rat ogre bodies and arms, which were attached backwards, gave me a lower torso. And a reversed Tyranid warrior's body gave me an upper body. I combined a cold one head with various Tyranid bits, For arms, I return to the rat ogres and use their tails to make gribbly tentacles. This is
nice.
This is a mess, yeah. This model.
Crazy.
Yeah. Moving on, though.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Mark. Do the Siltwalkers.
Siltwalkers. Threat level high. The peculiar tidal patterns of Jigglyrax 5 cause frequent floods all over the landmass. The fauna of Jalgrax 5 has adapted to these conditions by developing into amphibious forms. In this environment, the fiercest creatures often lose out to the most devious. In the later category is the Siltwalkers.
Mm, they are devious creatures.
Yeah. You want to read? I got to find a picture.
Sure. Man-sized tripods with a refined form of low cunning. Siltwalkers are able to run at great speed across the boggy plains, which is impossible for most other creatures. From their bulbous body protrudes three legs that end in razor-sharp talons, and at first glance, the animal looks like they should just sink deep into the mud. Hmm. Now, they kind of remind me of like a crab-like body, how it's kind of like circular, and it looks like it's covered in some kind of armor.
Yeah.
For sure. But then it has these long legs that spread from the body.
Yeah. If you're familiar with like Tyranid kits, they use like the Tyranid lictor arms, and it has three of those as its legs. So it's quite tall. It's very chitinous and bug-like. Mm-hmm. And yeah. Yeah.
You want to take over, Mark?
Yeah.
Number three.
Instead, they have a baffling ability to shunt a large portion of their mass into another dimension while they pursue their quarry. They're able to reverse this effect at mid-pounce and pin their victims to the ground with crushing force, holding it there while it continues to stab and stab and stab and stab.
Yeah, all three legs. Yeah, just mincing this meat.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, until all that's left is just torn apart and destroyed meat. Which then,
yeah, of course. Well, then it's easy to eat up if it's in tiny. Mouths. Exactly. Yeah. Just like crabs.
Yeah, exactly.
I love the idea of this thing jumping crazily high because its weight is nothing. Yeah. And then at the apex of its jump, it just brings all its mass back into our reality and just slams itself on its prey.
Yeah. Like this takes. Yeah, it's a close second to Crotalid.
That's right. Yeah, that was like, what Mark and I were like, well, what's better, Crotalid or Siltwalker?
I think this one's cool too, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a very unique ability.
It can open a dimension. Yeah.
Any of the creatures that defy reality are just so much cooler.
You would almost think that this thing has some kind of psyker ability or ability to connect to the warp if it can do that.
The weird thing about some of the stuff in 40K is sometimes they very specifically mention that it's warp.
Yeah.
And sometimes they don't mention it at all, which is weird to me. Because I agree, like, if someone told me that, oh, this thing can just, like, put its weight into
another dimension,
you instantly would assume the warp.
Yeah.
So I think you could take it either way. You could
but
say
it might
that,
be putting it into Dimension 7.
Exactly. Because we also know that there are alternate dimensions that exist in 40K. But I think you could
but they're not warp related.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Not at all.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Yeah.
It's a weird creature.
Yeah. It's sweet. I love it. I just love that image, man, of it just pouncing and just slamming.
Yeah. It's very cool. And then just this mess, this goopy, gory mess on the ground after they're done destroying their food.
All right. The next one, Arachnospila. Threat level high. A few unlucky planets of the Imperium have to deal with the scourge that is an Arachnospila colony. These strange four-legged insects live in massive underground hives and are marked by a raised ring of dirt that has been tinged by a red by a pheromone they secrete. If a hive is disturbed by an invader, they'll angrily pour from their home and swarm the aggressors.
they sound like ants.
Yeah,
that's definitely the image.
Like
I get.
An anthill.
Mm-hmm.
This is a picture of what
with like a perimeter.
Yeah,
that'd be crazy to just see like a red dirt wall.
Yeah,
don't cross that wall.
Yeah, they're like four legged though.
Mm-hmm.
But
and with massive lips, I think those purple pink lips.
Just keep reading.
Great for kissing.
Great for kissing.
Having feeble exoskeletons, Arachnospila possess only one method of attack, dying. When an Arachnospila dies, it explodes in a shower of acid. The explosion of caustic fluid is often enough to kill a man, and certainly any creature foolish enough to bumble into the hive's territory. So they're kind of kamikaze.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they just kill themselves?
Yeah.
There are creatures that do that, though, like... bees and stuff will die when they sting, right?
Yeah.
So
drown each other or drown things in bodies. Ants will sometimes do like literally,
crush like they'll just swarm. Commit suicide to defend the whatever they're defending.
Yeah.
So, due to the fact that Arachnospila multiply at an alarming rate, exterminating them is quite difficult. Larger species have been hinted at, but such reports remain unconfirmed.
Now this one seems way more crazy to like go into what other bugs do they have. Like, because these ones are just exploders, these are just like drones. They must have other types.
Exactly
of,
yeah, where's
it's
the
like
queen?
A it's more like a whole genus or something.
Yeah. Like I see it.
What are the warriors like? These are just the gatherers maybe.
That's true.
Unrelated note, that's a cool picture of a Terminator half in suit and half not.
Thank
is that
you,
other
Google.
Half blown up by an Arachnospila?
Yeah, exactly.
Arachnospila.
So that kind of covers all the different animals or creatures that we're going to talk about out of these white dwarves.
There's some cool ones. Let's play Battle Royale. Who versus who? Who would win?
All right, Jordan, you get first pick.
Yeah.
I got to go back up the list here and have a look.
I'm not gonna lie, there's only one right choice.
Okay, let us know.
It's the greater barking toad. Nobody wins.
Yeah.
But no, if you can't pick that, what do you pick?
Man.
In a battle royale.
The silt walker, man, I think takes it. It's quick, it's big, it's deadly, it's smart too.
The Calithrax fiend? They grow the size of the truck. They have that thick chitin.
Yeah, with the digging
massive claws.
Yeah. But like you said, man, it just jumps. It jumps 100 fucking feet into the air.
Yeah.
Boom, pinpoint accuracy.
Exactly, yeah. Like, and then it just drops like a rock.
So fast. Yeah. Faster than a rock.
And just punctures all of those people with its massive claws.
Yeah, I don't think anything could really beat something like that.
Yeah. Maybe, what about the Ash Croaker?
Maybe because it's quick. I could see it maybe being...
I don't think it could be the silt walker.
No.
What if it just dodged quickly and then it... No.
And then not on it.
The silt walker then launches itself into space.
Even that one... what's that one with like the three brains or five brains?
Oh, the Pentarant.
Yeah. I don't know. That seemed kind of dangerous. I feel like intelligence is more dangerous than anything.
Hmm. Or maybe like the Milosaur where it's like venomous where it... The Siltwalker could stab one segment. The Millipede gets one bite. Now it's poison. Now it lost.
Sure. Both lose. Nobody wins.
Well, the Millipede might survive. Like, I don't know how Millipedes work, but if you kill some segments of them, are they fine? I don't
know. Also, has like a rock skin, so.
Yeah. Maybe it's hard to like, trade. Yeah, push through or whatever. The Magma
King? Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. How would it fight that? Okay.
It's covered just in rock and it eats lava. This thing is like living in a lava river. How's it going to attack? Is it going to kill itself by going in lava?
Okay.
I don't know, bro.
So it's a game of rock, paper, scissors is what it turned out to be.
That's exactly what
it is. I like that.
It's Siltwalker, Magmakin, Slasher Beast.
Arachnospila, I choose you!
Yeah, in a Pokemon battle.
Yeah. There's some cool stuff.
Use Scratch!
Use Scratch! It was very effective.
Use Tail Whip!
Lower your opponent's evasion!
Oh, I hate Tail Whip. Just the worst move ever.
But now, moving on from animals onto everybody's favorite, plants.
Oh, I love me some plants.
Ooh, Mark, these are not the kind of plants you want in your house.
I'll be the judge of that.
Okay, you're more than welcome to judge.
All right, well, let's start with the first one. It sounds pretty harmless. The Mordinian duplicator.
Oh, perfect. Okay,
maybe it's just very easy to maintain. It grows well.
Right, it duplicates, so like you always have another one.
Yeah, perfect. Right? Yeah. Okay, it sounds nice. The dense, fertile jungles of the death world of Morden house some of the most unique and deadly fauna found anywhere in the galaxy. The Mordinian duplicator is no exception and is subject to great interest to the field biologists of the Imperium. The massive plant, which only flourishes in the deepest part of Morden's jungle, stands anywhere from 4 to 7 meters tall. It has a bulbous body crowned with a flower that has a number of spherical chambers inside. Around what can only be called the body of the plant are a series of 2 to 4 massive vines, which extend away from the body and are animated by a mysterious fast form of Truger pressure. Truger.
This is what it looks like.
So I'm going to tell you guys, 7 feet or 7 meters is 23 feet.
That's pretty big.
That's a pretty big plant.
Yeah, yeah. There is a picture of it. For people,
did we describe it yet? Sorry, I was googling.
What makes a specimen so unique is its means of asexual reproduction. Lashing out with massive vine-like tendrils, the duplicator captures unfortunate jungle creatures and deposits them wholly inside one of the main chambers located within the duplicator's flower-like top.
So, okay, if you're looking at it, you guys know, like, trypophobia?
Yeah!
That, like, fear of holes and stuff?
Yeah.
Okay, and you know that, like, it's like that frog that puts all its babies in its back?
Oh, yeah!
That's what that top thing reminds me of. It just is like, it's a flat top with just a bunch of weird misshapen holes in it, just waiting for things creatures to be placed inside this thing.
Okay.
That's creepy.
Once secure inside of the chamber, the hapless victim's biological matter is immediately broken down via powerful corrosive enzymes. This biological soup is combined with the duplicator's own DNA in a rapid process that takes a matter of seconds to complete.
Blows my mind how fast this is.
Yeah, yeah.
Whoa.
Like, immediately, like, digested, and then, your DNA is broken down and combined with this thing?
It's almost sounds technological, not biological.
Yeah, like how fast is it processing things?
The duplicator then condenses and reforms this material into a seed-like pod that is ejected from the chamber down to the jungle floor, where it immediately takes root. The pod splits and grows, mimicking the parent's form as it begins to develop into another duplicator plant at an astonishing pace. It's just fast. The thing is just... overdrive. Within a matter of minutes, a fully grown duplicator stands a few meters from the parent that spawned it, ready to continue the cycle. Needless to say, encountering a single duplicator plant is a bit of a rarity on Mordian. They are more often than not encountered in expansive clusters that stretch for great distances.
Okay, so you guys I'm gonna bounce it off you guys.
Okay.
So to feed, this thing needs animals to come close enough within its vines.
Yeah.
Right? Because then it deposits them in there. But if you have like a 1 kilometer diameter circle of these plants, how are the ones on the inside getting any kind of nourishment?
Well, I think like they still get like photosynthesis. They still have roots, so they still get minerals from the soil.
Okay, so you don't think
this is just reproduction.
Ah, yeah, this is just okay. I definitely assumed this was how they like got energy. Mm. But no,
going off this picture, they have leaves, so I know that's photosynthesis.
Okay, yeah, they got those green things. Yeah. Okay, you know what?
Yep.
Problem solved. Just like that.
Plant man.
He is a plant man. Yeah, but it's crazy, like, minutes you disappear. And I can only assume this thing is 23 feet high. Those holes are big enough for a human, man.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to shove a human in that hole. And you're going to be broken down instantaneously.
Jeez. Yeah.
It's a great way to hide a body.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just toss the body like, over at
DNA
it.
DNA is pretty much gone. Like, there's nothing left. Yeah.
Okay. I need me one of those.
Brutal.
For unrelated reasons, of course.
Mark, you can't fit that in your house. It's 23 feet high. Tomato, tomato. We'll cut a hole in the roof.
Seems like kind of an invasive species, though. It would kind of take over your garden.
Yeah, your poor little cats.
No, small cat.
Next, we have the Ripper Whip.
The Ripper Rip.
Possibly the most infamous inhabitant of Kenov 3, Ripper Whips are strange tree-like animals. Easily 7 meters in height. So another large thing.
Trees, man.
Large specimens can reach upwards of 20 meters, although this is rare.
Oh.
Documented, but rare. They tend to cluster in small groves and can be detected simply by the clearings around each trunk. The trunk of a ripperwhip hides a powerful maw. You like that?
I do.
Lined with thick, thorn-like teeth. This circular opening is found near the crown, where the various feeding tentacles branch off. Covered in thorns, these tentacles are lined with small mouths, surrounded by short hooks.
Ah.
And will start to devour anything caught in them as the whip drags its prey back to the trunk.
Ah.
When I was first reading this, I was like, oh, tree-like animals, they must be ants. And then I'm reading, I'm like, oh, God, no. Ah. No, please.
Not the whip-a-whip.
Not the mouth on your tentacles.
Yeah.
And they are rooted in the ground, it seems, like a regular tree.
They are, but we'll get back to that. An ambush predator, ripper whips tend to remain quiet until something strays within reach of their tentacles. Once this happens, the ripper whip will explode into a flurry of activity, lashing out with its tentacles in order to securely immobilize its prey. As ripper whips tend to cluster in small groves, an attempt to escape from one will often result in the victim blundering into range of another.
Jeez. Yeah, there's this sweet picture where it's just this guardsman shredded. Yeah. Like, there's just so many barbed tentacles flying everywhere.
And his face looks completely, like, ripped up, like the tentacles went across it.
Yeah,
and
like, as soon as one of those gets you, you can't get it off without ripping.
A,
like,
they're thorns and barbed, and B, they have mouths on their little tentacles.
I forgot about the mouths!
They're
going to
start eating you.
No!
You can't even fight it off. Ripper whips can also move.
So, Jordan, don't.
Yeah, you're not safe just because you're 10 feet away. Yeah.
So, no plants.
Slowly making their way across the Kenov surface in search of new hunting grounds. So they're like migratory.
Yeah.
Hey, were those trees that close yesterday?
They're like demonic ants.
Evidence shows ripper whips will cooperate to take down large prey.
That's crazy.
You almost wonder if this belongs more in the bestiary.
Yeah. What's the difference between this as like a plant versus an animal?
Seems, like flesh and blood, where this is like.
Well, and it has like an intelligence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's got to have like a nervous system.
Yeah,
and
you
a
can
brain
cooperate.
Yeah. I don't know. It seems like a lot of their like plants stray into that could be animal stuff. But I mean, hey, it's a tree.
It's a tree.
So.
Can I burn it for a fire?
Probably. But you're going to want to dry it out first, for sure.
Yeah. The next one is the Kenak floater. The floaters of Kenak are filled with hydrogen and drift across the planet with the vagaries of the wind. They have sensitive feeler tentacles, which detect warmth and moisture above the normal local levels. This is usually to detect streams, hot springs, and so forth, but unfortunately is also sensitive enough to detect the temperature and moisture changes caused by, let's say, a human.
Oh, good.
Just an example. Yeah.
Yeah. When it finds such a place, the floater explodes, scattering its seed pods over a wide area. These seed pods have a diamond-hard outer casing with razor-sharp edges and will scythe through anything within range.
Crazy.
So it must, like forcibly eject during this explosion, like it shoots it out like a grenade.
Yeah, like it's filled with something. What, hydrogen, which is very
explosive.
Yeah, you could have like almost weaponized this thing.
Really. Yeah, just release them over like your enemy's city or something.
Yeah,
very cool.
Yeah. Okay. Up next, we got the myrrl catcher. The myrrl catcher is a ground-hugging vegetation, which has roots that are extremely sensitive to vibrations in the ground, such as it might be caused by a wandering an animal wandering past. It looks innocuous enough when dormant, but when it attacks, because of course it has to attack.
Well, naturally it has to.
It doesn't want to, it has to!
It has no choice.
Huge tentacle whips from the many frilled mauls lash out. They carry a paralyzing toxin which acts almost instantaneously.
And then you can only assume that my guess is that the animal dies, and then as its nutrients soak into the earth below, this thing must like, yeah, soak up all the death.
And yeah, decay. Like this one, it doesn't sound like
it doesn't say it feeds, you know? It doesn't have like a. I guess it has a maw. It has many frilled maws. Mm. Maybe they do chew.
Okay. Good for you, tree.
Yeah.
Don't let us tell you how to you do you.
Yeah, you eat however you want to eat. You frilly maw. The next we have Pyrospores of Durga 4. At least it's not Durga 3.
Hmm. Never liked the threes.
Enigmatic specimens that only seem to flourish in the most extreme of environments, the pyrospores that dot the landscape of the desolate lava world of Durga 4 are a severe obstacle for planetary surveyors and native creatures alike. The large conical fungi... Ooh, fungi.
Fungi.
They emit a combustible vapor that is easily ignited by the volatile lava flows that snake across the planet's surface. It's no surprise that these gases often erupt into a gout of searing flame that is quite capable of roasting unfortunate creatures foolish enough to stumble too close to the fungi.
Oh, that's crazy.
So are they constantly emitting this, or do they only emit it when like they are disturbed?
Hmm. Yeah, it seems
that way.
Yeah,
it's like a defense mechanism.
Yeah.
Appropriately, the genetic material of the spore is quite resilient to high temperatures. This trait has made the use of explosives to clear pathways very unsuccessful. It merely scatters the spore material. Worse, any attempt to destroy or uproot the fungi up close meets with disaster, as the pyrospores often collapse when they have sustained heavy damage and explode in a fiery ball as their flammable gases are released en masse and ignite in a horrific death throw.
Crazy, yeah. I could see these always leaking too, and like you just see the field, and you just see like,
yeah, you see little like it releases the gas, and then it travels, and then poofs because it's ignited or something.
Yeah,
I could see either. I could see it releasing when it has to, and then it maybe has a store, and it releases a bunch when it's disturbed or something as a defense mechanism.
Yeah, I feel like if you bumped into it, it would just release a bunch.
Yeah, because it even says when they sustain heavy damage, they explode, right? So they obviously have some kind of reaction
for sure,
when you interact with them.
Yeah.
They look like coral.
Yeah.
Almost. Or at least what this person modeled
them like as. An undersea sponge or something.
Yeah.
Like fungi, though, we don't see enough fungi in 40K in these like herbarium portions.
Yeah. We do a lot of orc episodes, though.
Yeah. You son of a bitch got me there. Yeah, you get a lot of like...
But orcs belong in the herbarium.
I mean, pretty much, yeah.
That's nice.
Oh, man.
Do you want me to do this one?
Yeah.
Or you do it? Okay. Wireweeds. Many derelict industrial plants and functioning authority establishments on Necromunda are defended by belts of biowire. Biowire is a genetically altered cross between plant and mineral, originally developed from a death world xenomorph. Spores.
Lots to unpack there. Yeah, okay.
Spores from the established biowire patches can drift into the ventilation systems, leaving dense clumps of this dangerous wire in many uninhabited parts of the underhive. To underhive dwellers, this is known as wireweed.
So they're just like, this wireweed is not a naturally occurring thing. It's the man-made cross between plant and mineral, developed from a death world xenomorph. So there's some creature that had some trait that they wanted.
Yeah. But it sounds like this.
It's like a GMO.
Biowire still can like spores and reproduce.
Yeah, it sounds like now it's like found a place where it can reproduce and like spread itself. But originally this is like a
man-made up.
Thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was originally grown as a form of military defense, a sort of living barbed wire. The wire is very tough and regenerates quickly. Its sharp thorns can pierce armor and lacerate exposed flesh to the bone. To make things even worse, wireweed secretes an acidic sap, which reduces those entangled to bone in mere hours.
Jeez!
Some would say that's the cherry on top.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's like a great defense thing that you can, like, grow. You know?
Yeah, it's so cool. Like, bio mineral, plant mineral.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
That's how we do in 40K.
Mm.
We take something crazy and then we make it have acidic sap to also reduce you to bone.
Space Marine, acidic sap.
That's right. Well, it spits it from its mouth.
Cool. That was everything we had for you guys this episode. There's so many cool ones.
So let's Pokemon battle our plants.
Yeah, Pokemon battle plants, of course.
Jordan, what plant are you Pokemon choosing?
The Ripper Whip.
Okay. The Ripper Whip. Okay, Mark, choose your character.
The Duplicator.
The Duplicator?
Yep.
I am going to pick the... Oh, you guys didn't give me much left, hey?
There's a good one still.
I am going to...
Pyrospores. Pyrospores.
Yeah. I'm stuck between Pyrospores and Kanak Floater.
Mm.
I want to wait till... But I guess it wouldn't explode over you guys because you're just plants and it doesn't eat plants.
Yeah, you explode now. You've just shot particles into the duplicator's mouth.
So yeah, exactly.
Just duplicate 1,000 more of me.
Stupid Eric.
Stupid exploding. All right,
that's
Eric.
It. Pyrospores. Yeah. I'm gonna explode all over you guys.
You better not
agitate me. I'll release gases. I pretty much am a pyrospore. At this point.
I think what happens is the Whippoorwip just kind of just moves around and fucks with the other two plants.
The crazy thing is 20 meters. Like, what's the range on this thing's tentacles?
Yeah.
There's no being safe from it. Anyways.
The plants are fun.
Plants and animals.
Take up gardening as a pastime if ever you're in one of your 40K hobby funks.
I'll start a YouTube channel called The Grim Dark Gardener.
Yeah, well, that's a good day.
Yeah.
Holy moly.
That would be good.
I give tips and tricks on how to trim your
Ripper Whip. All right, you're going to want to approach them slow. And every episode just ends with you dying as you try to do your gardening, but you're just horrifically killed every time.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's a good YouTube channel.
I would enjoy that. I'd watch that. Wow. That's the end of the episode. But before we actually go, we want to thank all of our new Imperial Tithers, people who have subscribed to our Patreon.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to list them all off here. Thank you to Plot Guy, Quicklinski, Dorfington, Pappas, Wagner, Roy, Borboa, Elric, Nimmo, Jimmy, KD Camry, Blatte, Smith, Michael, Henry, Anthony, Texas Red 99, Branded, Maxime, Miniature Obscura, Sanderson, Kraken Attackin, Kaladin Stormblessed, Florian, Chaplain Sam, Curry, Cash, Loic, D. Goodfellow, and all right, the last one is Well Fuck Me Raw and Come Up My Bum.
Thank you so much, Well Fuck Me Raw and Come Up My Bum,
for your
donation of...
greatly appreciated.
Greatly appreciated. Yikes. Yeah.
I mean, guys, $5 is $5. You know? That being said, I hope you guys enjoyed the episode. Jordan, thank you for hanging out, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was fun.
Yeah. What, we're pretty much done the episode now. What's going on in your podcast world?
Oh, not much. Just still doing the Star Lords podcast, all about the Star Wars universe, but we mainly focus on Legends pre-Disney era of Star Wars. So
I just went through a whole buttload of Star Wars stuff. Like, I watched all 9 movies.
Oh, wow.
And I did the Attack of the Clones.
Okay.
And all of this was because I was watching Mandalorian and I heard Ahsoka Tano was coming in and I was like, well, I don't know anything about Ahsoka.
Yeah.
So then
that's how they get you.
Yeah, then I did Attack of the Clones and I was like, well, now I just want to watch real Star Wars. So I watched all 9 movies.
Yeah.
I even listened to a couple of the episodes. I really liked the Darth Sidious one.
Oh, yeah.
Especially the one where you hear about his the portion where you hear about his upbringing on Naboo.
Yeah.
That was really cool because I had no idea.
And actually, the book that most of the source material for the episode is from is it's considered to be like one of the best Star Wars books that wasn't like a movie.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. The Darth Sidious one.
Interesting.
So if people were interested in getting into like a Star Wars book, that would be a good one. It's very I haven't read it. I've only read like the summary of it.
Sure.
But sounds like, you know, very, I don't know, maybe Machiavellian Game of Thrones kind of thing, you know.
Yeah, you, especially when you're explaining Sidious's like history and like his rebellious phases and his at odds with his father, but he's from like a wealthy family. He just gets into trouble all the time. But he's this shadowy figure for all 9 Star Wars movies. You don't know anything about him other than he is the Emperor.
Yeah.
Right? And like, oh, at one point he was on Naboo, but you see so very little of him on Naboo. So it was really cool to dive like that into his history because I had no idea.
Yeah, well, it's also kind of interesting because I think they pull, because Naboo is very like Sicily, Italy inspired.
Hmm.
And so they kind of pull from like this kind of Medici, like Niccolo Machiavellian.
Did you watch the Medici on Netflix?
No.
Oh, it's good.
Yeah. I've heard it is, okay. But it is. I think they're that's sort of the inspiration.
I see.
Of Palpatine.
And you kind of see it in their robes too. They're like really fancy robes that Palpatine wears kind of on episode 1. You see a lot of him and like his entourage with him. It's very much like power found in like the small group of people.
Yeah. But also like Palpatine's his like original mentor that he ends up killing. That's a whole interesting side story too. I think it's actually it's one of the coolest stories outside of the movies. You know,
I've heard that the Skywalkers are not the lead characters of Star Wars, but it's actually Sidious.
The Palpatines?
The Palpatines.
Don't be stupid, Mark.
That's what I heard on the street. You know, I'm not trying to start
on
any
the street.
Yeah, I'm not trying to start any fights or nothing. Yeah. But
on the corner.
Where do you land?
Yeah.
I haven't really like heard much of that theory, but maybe I'm out of the loop on that, but
look, I go into the weird places. I'm not even
the
sure.
Weird streets.
Yeah. Disney tried to do like an angle with that with Rey Palpatine. You know,
so I know this is a 40K podcast, and this is not a Star Wars podcast. Yeah. But I do have to mention. So I'm watching 7, 8, and 9, and I had only ever seen them once. And I'm trying. When you watch them the first time, you're trying to just be immersed in it and find things that you enjoy and understand the flow. But on the second watch through, like, you're trying to pick things out of the movie.
Yeah.
And so the first time that Rey ever holds a lightsaber and fights with it, she uses Palpatine's like straight stab. So the first time you ever see Palpatine fight, he does that move.
Oh.
Like in episode 3.
More proof of what I'm saying.
So I just thought it was weird because I'm
watching... Kind of a deep cut, yeah.
I'm watching like... I can't remember exactly whether it's 7 or 8, but Christian was telling me that that was before they had ever planned her to be Palpatine's daughter or descendant. But
right,
I really did. Like, I'm texting him and I'm like, man, I see the similarities in their fighting style.
I don't know.
Here.
I think...
He said it was just coincidence.
Yeah, he... Abrams maybe had that idea the whole time, and he could have just stuck that in case he needed to connect those dots. Otherwise,
one little dot connected. Yeah.
It might have just been me, because for some reason it felt like it was glaring in the sun. I was like, "Oh my god, I see it so clearly right here!" And Christian's like, "What the fuck are you looking at, you stupid idiot?"
Yeah, like, I don't know. It's hard to like. I wouldn't assume. I know there's not a lot of evidence that. It seems like when they made episode 7, they didn't really have a clear direction on where they're going with that
trilogy. I agree.
Trilogy.
It does not feel that way. 7 to 8 to 9, it doesn't feel like 1, 2, and 3 feels like a trilogy.
Oh, yeah.
4, 5, and 6 feels like 7, 8, 9.
It's so disjointed. It's not good. Yeah, it's so disjointed.
I struggled.
Yeah. Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
It's cool to look movies. At. What did you just say?
They're my favorite movie.
I can't even be in the same room as you right now.
Disgusting.
Yeah. But anyways, I'm really enjoying Star Wars, and I'm really waiting for the text invite to be on the show.
I'm sure we'll do it.
He actually invited me a little while ago. I just happened to have something that day.
You want an invite from Jordan, not from Christian.
I do. Yeah, I really do.
You want the invite from the person in charge, not the minion.
Exactly, yeah. Yes.
Well, I think we're like all equally in charge.
Oh, sure.
That's what the person in charge says.
Like how Mark and I are both in charge.
Exactly.
Yeah, equally in charge. Equal, sure. That's how that works.
No, yeah. You could probably cut, like, we usually have guests on, like, our review episodes. Yeah. So.
Oh, yeah. I'm. Don't worry about it. But yeah. You're still enjoying doing the podcast, still having fun?
Yeah, it's fun. It's definitely, like, a lot of work because we do a lot of, like, pre- and post-production. So
yeah, make it sound so good.
I really like the music that you guys put in.
Thanks, yeah.
And the little, like, tidbits of, like, quotes.
Yeah.
So cool.
Yeah, it's hard work, but we're gonna keep doing it for a little while and see where it goes. But it's fun. It's go check it out.
Yeah,
give us a 5-star rating and review.
Yeah. Hey,
you guys got a Patreon too?
You gonna pay us for this ad spot, Jordan?
Yeah, we have a Patreon. You can just dump Lorehammer and throw that money our way.
Yep.
They also accept. Donations of Bitcoin and Dogecoin.
The Bitcoin.
No, only Dogecoin. Oh. Dogecoin.
Only Doge.
Only Dogies.
Well, it's time.
We say our goodbyes once again, my friends. We go home.
Goodbye. I don't know.
Thanks, guys, for listening, and we'll see you next episode.
Peace.
Bye.